Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Matt, what's going on? You having any post-Super Bowl depression? Football is over and all of our focus is back on the NBA. Welcome to all of those who have forgotten that there is a basketball team here in Chicago. Welcome. We're so glad to have you.
Yeah. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? It was hard to watch that Super Bowl yesterday. Especially given how poorly the Rams performed. Knowing that they kind of, you know, gypped their way in because of the whole no-call debacle against the Saints, and knowing that the Bears beat the Rams earlier this season. And the, you know, I was watching that game saying that, you know, I know that the Bears lost the Patriots in the regular season too, but the Bears played that game poorly and still came pretty close. So, you know, they came like a yard away from sending that game to OT against the Patriots. So I felt empty, and I felt sad, and I felt reminded of the fact that the Bears season ended in such dramatically heartbreaking fashion. And because between that and the fact that the game itself was just a giant dud and boring, and not much anything exciting happened, I was just like, man, you know what? All right. Football season's over. Fine. Baseball, you know, spring training right around the corner. Cool, whatever. But I guess right now, like, the thing that's most exciting, and it's what you and I were talking about before we, you know, hit the record button, it is that even though it was Super Bowl week, the NBA was dominating headlines. So I'm really looking forward to the next few days leading up to the trade deadline on Thursday, because the NFL's over and NBA rolls on being a 365-day-a-year league, man. It is truly the best.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm just been stuck in my own world or not, and I was telling you that, but all week long I felt like the NBA just dominated, day after day dominated the NFL in all of the headlines. And then if you're just a casual NFL fan and you just follow it, you sat down to watch the Super Bowl, you went to a party and you got that product, I would be like, what? I was like, that's what we got? Or if you sat down to watch the commercials, or you were there to watch the halftime show, and then you got 45 seconds of Travis Scott, you got 60% of a Maroon 5 performance, and then you got half of Outkast. Like, what? Like, that's was a big disappointment as well. So just the whole thing to me was not all that great. And then top of all of that, then you had to watch the Patriots win once again. So to me, it was just kind of a throwaway. But I thought the funniest thing of it all was one of the big NBA writers out there, HP Basketball on Twitter, had said he got a text from somebody around the league and said, you know, all the NFL fans are going to be clowning us in the middle of summer when the Warriors are blowing out the other team they're playing in the Eastern Conference summer.
You know, that's certainly a potential possibility, if not likely. We'll see which team comes out of the East and if they manage to make a finals of it, assuming the Warriors will be there again. But you know, even if it's Warriors in the finals again, and if they roll to another title in, you know, five games or maybe a sweep or whatever it is, you still get to watch the Warriors play four times or five times. Like, neither of those teams yesterday were entertaining. Even when the Warriors roll a team, it's really fun while they're running away with it.
Before we get to everything that we're going to do on this show, this is an exciting week, man. This is, like, outside of a few different weeks in the NBA, this is one of my favorites. This is kind of a mystery, and I want to ask you a question, but before I do that, we're going to break down the Charlotte game today, probably spend about 10-15 minutes on that. The rest is going to be dedicated to the trade deadline, Going to open up the week talking about some of the trades that may or may not happen with the Bulls. Run through a bunch of scenarios. Going to be doing that every single day this week. Spend at least a segment doing that leading up to the trade deadline on Thursday. Free agency is another really great week in the summer, the dead period of the NBA. But we'll talk about all of that. You can drop your voicemails, your text messages, all of your trade scenarios at 331-979-1369. Can always hit us up on Twitter as well, at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Matt, but I got to ask you first, did you get as much enjoyment as I did out of not only watching DeMarcus Cousins absolutely dunk on Kyle Kuzma, but then what unraveled after that game with Michael Beasley and Lance Stephenson? Can we send a trade request right away, like Luke Walton for Jim Boylan? Who says no at this point? But did you enjoy that just as much as I did?
I think it's hilarious, man. It's like, and the whole time LeBron's just sitting there on the sideline with, you know, or, you know, he wasn't even on the bench, I don't think. I think he was in the locker room with what do they call it? Load management.
What is that?
Like, what the hell is that? If you're going to say rest, just say rest. If you're going to say general sort, just say load management. It's like LeBron doesn't want the word rest attached to his beautiful, shining legacy, so we came up with a different phrase for it. Give me a break. But to the incident that happened with the Lakers and the report that there was, you know, it wasn't physical, but certainly a loud verbal confrontation between Walton and a couple of the veterans like Beasley and McGee. I think a second report came out that said that Lance was not actually involved, but a couple of the vets had issue with Luke Walton. And to me, this is so clearly the other vets on the team doing LeBron's dirty work for him, right? It's like Beasley and JaVale McGee are both known for the most part as clowns in this league, and nobody's gonna, you know, say boo or bat an eye twice if they are the ones being attached to. People in LA are getting sick of Luke Walton. LeBron's here with his load management. He's the one who wants Luke Walton gone. Everybody knows that LeBron is a coach killer. Everybody knows that LeBron has really never gotten along with any of his head coaches in the NBA, and he wants to be his own coach. It's so hilariously transparent to me that LeBron was like, all right, guys, I'm going to take this night off, and here's our opportunity for some of the other vets to get into it with Luke Walton so that we can get him gone because I want him gone. That is clearly what happened.
I just think it's hilarious, you know. And, hey, maybe it's just the depression setting in from this Bulls season that I have to laugh at everything else going on around the league. And, you know, I can't laugh because of how bad this Bulls season is. But I'm telling you, man, Jim Boylan is going to write a book, and, you know, he's got his PDF rough draft version of Chicken Soup for the Soul's Player Mutiny, stories of how I was ready for it, how I expected it, how it created passion, and how it definitely didn't define the next 6 weeks of our season. 2019 New York bestseller. So there it is. He emailed that to Luke Walton on Saturday night. I can guarantee that. But let's get on to the Charlotte game. Let's try and do that for the next 10 or 15 minutes here. Wow, Bobby Portis. Let's start with him. What the hell? What the hell was that? That first half? That was crazy eyes from last season. Like,
yeah.
To me, that was Bobby Portis with his confidence back, and that was Bobby Portis healthy with his legs back. But then the second half was Bobby Portis Tale of Two Stories. So give me your analysis of that game. First half and second half, because it was a tale of two halves for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to see Markkanen kind of pick up the slack, and Markkanen had the big second half after a really quiet first half, you know, which is nice because I think with him it's been kind of the reverse most of the season, right? Like Markkanen will get out to a hot start and then he'll disappear. You know, Markkanen had himself a career high 13 makes on 13 attempts from the free throw line, and a lot of that action coming in the second half, he finished with 30. That was nice. But back to Bobby, you're right. Like, to me, it was crazy to watch his performance in the first half because it reminded me what good Bobby Portis looks like, because we haven't really seen him. And, like, unless you go all the way back to preseason games. Remember when between that and his performance at training camp and practices leading into the start of the season, Fred decided to give Bobby the starting spot at power forward over Jabari Parker once he figured out Jabari couldn't play the three?
That's how good Bobby was. But then he got hurt, and then he came back and then got hurt again and then came back. And clearly he has not been healthy and has not been on his game this season. But, you know, for all of those people years ago saying on Twitter, you know, hashtag free Bobby Portis, like, we now from that Charlotte game remember that good Bobby Portis is a really good basketball player in the NBA. Dude can score all over the floor. He even made some difference-making plays on the defensive end last night, which you'd never see from Bobby. I shouldn't say never, but rarely. And to me, the instant shock and awe of, oh my goodness, wow, Bobby, good Bobby. I forgot about good Bobby. My second thought immediately after that was, I wonder if the Bulls try and deal him before Thursday.
That's exactly what I was thinking, too. You know, as much as I love Bobby and everything else he brings to this team, I think every other Bulls fan thought that too, is what can he bring you back in a trade? And as we creep closer to that deadline, which is Thursday's, what contending team wants him? Because, you know, he's only owed, what, $2.5 million this year going into restricted free agency. What can he bring you back in return? Watching him hit all those shots and just light it up for the Bulls. Like, think about this too. Bobby Portis, in that second half or that second quarter especially, Jim Boylan sent out Shaq Harrison, Ryan Arcidiacono, Brandon Sampson, Bobby Portis, and Cristiano Felicio to start that second quarter. Think about that lineup for a second. The Bulls had no business at all staying in that first half. No business. I don't care how bad that Charlotte Hornets team was playing in that first half. And Bobby Portis was hitting shots left and right and left and right and left and right, going inside and outside. And let's be honest, the Bulls hit six of nine three-pointers in that second quarter, and most of those can be accredited to Bobby. I think Bobby had all four of his three-point shots in the second quarter. That's also a problem that I want to get into later, but we'll come back to that. But yeah, Bobby had a really nice first half. The thing is the issue comes down to the fact that a combined Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, and Chris Dunn, all three of those guys basically were silent. And that's a huge issue, Matt. It's like your three main guys of this team goes completely silent in the first half, and you're relying on your six-man power forward to come in the game and light it up for 28 points to stay in a game against a Charlotte team that you've been pretty good against all season long. That's a huge concern for me. Lauri Markkanen, 22 of his 30 points came in the second half, which is great to see, but Bobby's points in that first half were good for him, but not necessarily a good sentiment for the rest of this Bulls team. So I had to turn to myself too, though, and say, like, what can you turn that into on the trade market? And we can talk a little bit more about that at the back end of this episode. But let's shift our focus now. Going to the second half where the Bulls seem to lose all of their wheels and everything comes crashing down, what was the most concerning thing about this second half for you?
I mean, other than Kemba Walker absolutely destroying guys, which is nothing new. Like, Kemba has been putting up 30 and 40 pieces on this Bulls team, you know, in the age of the rebuild and even beyond that further back. So, I mean, it's awesome to see Kemba Walker play. And, of course, you know, there's another topic for the trade deadline segment later on, because a lot of Bulls fans are talking about, wow, wouldn't it be cool to get Kemba? Kemba Walker balled out. Nobody on the Bulls could guard him. And I repeat, nobody. He was eating Chris Dunn's lunch all night and certainly just took over in the fourth quarter. I want to say he had like 18 points in the fourth quarter or something crazy. But to me, the really unsettling and worrisome thing, and it's just kind of goes in line with this just like doldrum of a season that we're having to fight through, is that I didn't really notice it at first. Shout out to our guy Mark Karenzolis from Bulls HQ, who I think we're having on later this week. He pointed out that, you know, not only did Kemba go off, but the Bulls surrendered 74 second half points to the Charlotte Hornets. 74 second half points to a team that was playing in the second night of a back-to-back. Whereas the Bulls weren't they the team that had 3 days off leading up to that game on Saturday night? They had a doubleheader, or they had a back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday. They were off Thursday and Friday, and then coming into the game Saturday, that's 3 days of rest. And the Bulls somehow are the team, for all of the stuff that Boylan talks about with conditioning and grit and toughness, and you got to fight through and play 48 minutes, the Bulls got spanked in the second half by a team that was playing on the tail end of a back-to-back, and the Bulls were the team that was rested. That, to me, was the unforgivable part.
I agree with that, and you had mentioned Kemba Walker in the second half. He had 25 of his 37 points in the second half. That is crazy. On 8 of 12 shooting, like you had mentioned, the Hornets made adjustments in that second half, and Kemba Walker was basically just sitting back and doing whatever he wanted, getting to the bucket and drawing fouls, and he knew that. Shaq Harrison, Ryan Arcidiacono, both fouling basically any time Kemba Walker had the ball. Just hacking. So partially that's on skill and talent. So that's just throw your hands up and you get what you expected. But Darnell Mayberry mentioned in his column too, is like it's just poor fundamentals at that point. And, you know, that's back on Jim Boylan as well, as like that was part of his main goals, is get these guys back to their fundamentals. Well, we're what, 7-8 weeks into Jim Boylan's tenure, and we're still looking at fundamentals is a core part of his values, and that just can't happen. That just cannot happen. A couple other things too that I noticed, first half to second half, the Bulls shot a total of 4 free throws in the first half. Then they turned it around and shot 21 free throws in the second half, which was really good. That's really good for this Bulls team. We've harped on them all season long, Matt, about how they cannot, for the love of God, get to the free throw line. And they did. They did this in this game. 25 for 25 at the free throw line. That's unheard of for this Bulls team. So props to the Bulls for doing that. But that's on surface level. Let's dive a little deeper into that. Doing that and driving to the basket as much as the Bulls did allowed the Charlotte Hornets to get back into this game in the second half. The Hornets realized that if they want to catch up and get into this game, they've got to go back to their three-point shooting. And that's exactly what they did in the second half. The Hornets were 11 for 20 in the second half from the three-point line. 11 for 20. The Bulls took a total of 10 three-pointers. The Hornets made 11 threes in the second half. That's horrible. That's a 33-9 difference right there in the second half. So as much as you're getting to the free throw line in the second half, you let the Hornets make up all of that lead by just simply nailing threes. So that goes back to just Jim Boylan's philosophy overall. The idea that you don't care that much about the three-pointer is not going to work, man. It just simply is not. You let the Hornets scrape back into this one by shooting 5 for 10 in the third quarter from the three-point line and then 6 for 10 in the fourth. And by the way, the Hornets got to the free throw line in the third quarter and shot 17 free throws in the third quarter. 17!
I was going to say, like, that's the thing. You gave the Bulls credit for being 25-25 at the free throw line. You don't often see the Bulls that efficient and that regularly appearing at the charity stripe. But it didn't even matter as an advantage and edge to the Bulls in how this contest shook down, because the Hornets, for their edge in three-pointers, especially in the second half, as you pointed out, also hit 25 free throws. So it's like Jim Boylan's thing about, well, we're not too concerned about the disparity on three-point attempts, and we're really focusing on outscoring teams in the paint. Well, okay, Jordan, just like you said, you know, Archie, Shaq, whoever they were throwing at him, even Chris Dunn, you know, hacking Kemba to bits, putting him on the free-throw line. Kemba was 13 of 14 from the line. And so, like, that advantage didn't exist. The advantage didn't exist because not only were the Bulls going under screens again and letting the Hornets hit threes again, but they also put them on the free throw line. So, like, Jim Boylan, where are your tactical advantages coming from? Because the answer is there aren't any.
Right. And, you know, going to the bucket, too, even getting those free throws, You weren't finishing and getting and ones or any of that either. The Bulls were 7 for 19 in the third quarter, shooting 36.8%. Like you had mentioned, the Hornets shot 20 free throws in the second half to the Bulls 21. So that basically offsets anything that you want to say is an advantage. Because like I had mentioned before, the Hornets were 11 for 20 from the three-point line. So those cancel each other out. And the Hornets outscored you by 21 points. 21 points from the three-point line. And that's a killer. That's an absolute killer, and you can't let that happen. And it just doesn't make any sense. You shot 14 threes in the first half and then just completely went away from that in the second. And the Hornets adjusted, and you didn't. The Hornets shot 12 threes in the first half and weren't very good at it. They were 3 for 12 in the first half. So it's an adjustment game. It's an adjustment game, and they allowed all of the Hornets guys, they allowed Kemba especially, to drive to the basket. It opened everything up around the perimeter, and that's where the Bulls got exposed. And the trading twos for threes exposed Jim Boylan's idea that driving and getting to the paint and working through there doesn't work. And even teams who aren't very good, like the Charlotte Hornets, will expose you, will absolutely expose you, and that's what happened. Anything else you got from this night, besides Lauri Markkanen, who also I thought, you know, battling in that second half was nice to see, you know, actually drawing fouls. What did you say? He had 13. Yep. He was 13 for 13 from the free throw line.
Yep.
And that was a career high for him.
Career high, both makes and attempts. Really nice to see.
Nice
especially
to see.
Because that's kind of been a recurring topic of conversation on our show and a recurring worry among Bulls fans watching Markkanen this season. And maybe, you know, whether it's the elbow still giving him problems or whatever it is, the fact that he has looked a little less aggressive than we wanted him to be and expected him to be. So him getting to the free throw line 13 times is a good sign. Hopefully there is more of that in the final 30 or so games down the stretch. My final thought on this game would be, you mentioned earlier the fact that, yeah, the Bulls got to the free throw line. There weren't a whole lot of and ones going on. Some of Chris Dunn's layup attempts in that game Saturday night were pathetic, like truly pathetic. Like, what is this guy doing? It is, I am off. I you know, I was trying to hang on to the Chris Dunn, you know, bandwagon. I am off. That guy looks lost. He could be a competent backup point guard on a contending team whose main focus is defense. But that guy cannot run an NBA offense. Cannot.
Yeah, man. I have no idea what's going on with him. Your guess is as good as mine at this point, because that was... it was truly brutal to watch. 3 for 11 again against the Hornets. He was 1 for 2 from three. I mean, he had five rebounds. He had 4 assists. He had 1 turnover, and he was a -8 in the plus minus. So, and he scraped away with a big fat goose egg in the free throw attempts. Big fat goose egg. So. In a game where the Bulls shot 25 for 25 from the free throw line, that's awful. So I'm just gonna leave it there.
I mean, from your starting point guard, like, that's unacceptable. I know that people see Chris Dunn, or wanted to see Chris Dunn, as not necessarily the score first point guard and more so the guy to get Markkanen and LaVine their looks and their touches. But here's the problem with that. Right now, it looks like Chris Dunn has essentially zero chemistry with Zach LaVine, limited chemistry with Lauri Markkanen, has turned the ball over a lot this season, and so he's neither. He's not a score-first point guard or a pass-first point guard, which in the NBA is not a starting point guard.
No, Matt, you're right. Just as we were looking up these stats, Chris Dunn, his entire season, he's only had 2 games this entire season where he shot 3 or more free throw attempts in a game. One coming against the Orlando Magic on the 21st, he had 6 free throw attempts, and one coming against the Atlanta Hawks just a few weeks ago, where he was 5 for 6 from the free throw line. The rest are 3 free throw attempts or under, and there are a ton of goose eggs in between these, and a lot of just 2 attempts or under. So you're right. That's all I got. That's all I got. It was a game of up and downs. Individually, there were some things that we could say were very good, but overall, you know, the freak out about needing to lose this game, and I saw some freak out about Bobby Portis's first half and like need to get this dude off the team. Like, even if they don't trade him by the deadline, I don't think it's really that big of a deal. Because look, they blew this game, even though Portis had 28 in the first half. So, like, even if he does stay on this team, I think there's not a whole lot to worry about right now, guys. So, I think we'll be okay.
Oh, you mean like because we almost accidentally won a game we shouldn't win?
Yes, and like they still found.
Yeah, I would. As long as Jim Boylan is coaching this team, they will find a way to lose
games.
Even if they come into the second half with a lead. Which, I'm serious, like, we might look back on this and say nobody wanted to talk about it or nobody knew it, but we have to give props to John Paxson for running the most brilliantly disguised tank. Or maybe it's not brilliantly disguised. Maybe there are some Bulls fans out there listening saying, come on, that's clearly what's happening here. When they you know, kicked out Fred and gave Boylan the keys, maybe it was their intention all along that this guy would be so bad that they would turn around and you know, make a 180 and slam on the gas to the top of the draft lottery standings for Zion. That could be what's going on.
Maybe since the Carter injury, but I have not bought into that in a single bit. Boylan's still trying to save his job. I think that's what's going on here. Simple as that, man.
Not
here.
Happen,
maybe it's not here. Maybe it's not. He's trying to save his job here, but the dude's still trying to save his resume as far as what's going down, and he wants a job somewhere else if he's about to get fired at the end of the season.
Yeah,
so keep that in mind as well.
He'll still make a nice little chunk of change next season to not coach.
Right. But he still wants to coach somewhere else, even if it's not a head coaching job.
Yeah. Try Utah.
Oh, Mikey. I think he's banned from going to the state of Utah in general.
Oh, come on. They've had a nice break from Boylan. Maybe they're ready for Boylan round two.
Just do a quick Jim Boylan Utah Twitter search and see what comes up. I promise you there is...
So much grit. So much grit and toughness.
All right.
So much passion.
Bulls across our chest.
You know, we got bulls across our chest. And
quickly, Matt, before we shift to trade deadline, I guess this is a good transition for trade deadline talk. Because classic, Matt, as soon as we stop recording, what happens on Friday? What happens?
Bulls happens, made a move,
of course.
Right?
Yes. Small move, but for the third time in this Bulls season, the Bulls make a move for cash considerations. Hey, I'm about to spend all this money. This is more of a salary dump than anything else. And they make a move with Oklahoma City. They take on cash. And also, let me see if I can get this name right. Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot.
Nice.
And they get him from OKC. Hey, there we go. I got it. I had to practice that name about 15 times before I could actually do it. So, but yes, they get him. The sad thing I found out, though, about him is OKC declined to pick up his option for next year, so the Bulls getting him is actually more a salary dump than anything else, because even if he does play, the Bulls can only offer him a max of $2.5 million in unrestricted free agency this summer. So if a team does want to pick him up,
right,
they could sneak in and offer him $3 million and steal him away from the Bulls. So I don't know if he's going to get any playing time in the next 29 games, but... more so than anything else, this is just to pick up the cash from OKC, and they had the extra roster spot to do that. And on top of all of that, Bulls legend Carmelo Anthony was waived.
Yeah, I'm about to break a whole check, yeah. And my mellow jersey, no.
So, thoughts?
Heartbroken at the end of the mellow era in Chicago. So sad to say goodbye to such a Chicago Bulls legend. It's... just so Bulls to not care about the look that this gives, right? To not care about how this is perceived by the fan base. To not care how it is perceived to anybody other than the people within that organization making these transactions happen to scrap some dough together. Between these three deals, MCW, Melo, and now Luwawu, the Bulls have netted themselves a nifty, according to what I saw on Twitter from a capologist, $5.2 million. That is pretty close to covering Fred Hoiberg's salary for next season and on your way to covering the $1 million you have guaranteed to Boylan next season after the raise. If this is what they're doing, bookkeeping to say, hey, Jerry, look, it's okay. We have to pay three coaches next season because of our own incompetence, but we found the money to do it. Good news, bad news. It is, to me, that's what's happening here. And the grievance that I have and that I expressed a couple days ago is fans' misinformation and talking about giving away second-round picks in these trades, which is just flat not true. These are protected picks that will never convey. And there's a frustration I have with people using false information to make the front office look bad with these trades because it just makes the fan base look stupid. It makes the fan base look like they don't know what they're talking about and all they care about is yelling hashtag FireGar Packs into that dark, cold Chicago night. When if you educate yourself to know what's going on, you see that there are reasons for doing these trades. However, that being said, it is still frustrating to sit there and watch them make these kinds of transactions when other teams around the league who are trying to go from being irrelevant to relevant are making big swings and making big moves. And the Bulls are like, well, we need to scrap together enough cash to pay Fred Hoiberg and Jim Boylan to go away. That sucks.
You want me to make you really angry right now?
Sure.
I'll tell you why that's not to pay Jim Boylan or Fred Hoiberg this summer. So that $5.2 million that they just scrapped away, that's not to pay Jim Boylan or to pay Fred Hoiberg. It could be to make up for the money that they'll have to pay Jim Boylan, that, you know, to make up for the difference of giving him that raise. Because I did see Bobby Marks said it was about $5.6 million. I'm not sure what the difference is there anyway. Remember, the Bulls picked up Cameron Payne's option. And they also waived him, but they also owed him $3.2 million. So that's still on their books. They had to pay him that money. $3.2 million there. They owed Marshawn Brooks. They waived him. And they also owed Michael Carter-Williams, whatever it was. Matt, what does that add up to? Toss in Jim Boylan's, whatever it is, the $200,000 in raise money for next year, that's guaranteed money there. You get to about $5.4 million. So, there it is. They use the money to pay off Marshawn Brooks. Fine, go away. Cool with that. They made up for the mistake in Cameron Payne, which I had mentioned a few weeks ago when they did the Melo deal where they got cash for that. I said they cut that in about a third. Fine, making up for a mistake that they had made that they tripled down on. And now this deal where they collected cash for this. All of those add up to the money that they just made this season. So that's where I think all the cash is going. And look, we can dice this up a million different ways, but realistically, I think that's what they've done with this money. Made up, most importantly, for the money that they spent on that option for Cameron Payne, ultimately to waive him. They got all of that money back just from these three deals. That was 60% of the money that they got in return in the last month.
And I mean, let's be real. Picking up campaign's option is possibly one of the most idiotic things they've done in recent history. We heard things like NBA players and Cam's teammates and people on the Bulls coaching staff saying that after two practices, when Cam Payne arrived from OKC, they found out this guy can't play in the NBA. Can't be effective in the NBA for damn sure. And it only took two practices because they gave him a pass on practice one because they thought he might be nervous in a new place. I know, you know, you and I talked to Darnell Mayberry recently about the campaign saga column that he wrote, which was really fascinating as far as kind of getting Cam's side of things in his very unhappy tenure with the Bulls and the way that the fan base treated him as, you know, the captain of the tank and all that kind of stuff. It is the Bulls front office who doubled down on the bad trade that brought him here by picking up his option. Whether they were trying to save face and make it look like, oh, campaign? Oh, no, he's definitely a player. When Gar said that ridiculous stuff about him being a point guard of the future, and we saw campaign play and said, that guy? That guy, Gar? You're our scout, Gar? No! They doubled down, and maybe they were trying to validate their own bad decision. But picking up his option, you know how I feel like it was fairly recently, Jordan, you and I were talking about, would you rather the Bulls front office make proactive moves to rectify mistakes that they made? And that's, you know, kind of what we're talking about here, about where this money is going that they made in these three transactions. Or would you rather they just continue to make dumb mistakes? I think we would all agree, if we are stuck with these people, we would at least like them to recognize their mistakes and do what they can to correct them. Campaign was the opposite of that. They made a mistake and they doubled down on it. And that I think, is why it is so infuriating to a lot of the fans to say, this is, you know, if that's where the money is going, you got to scrape together some of these, you know, book cleaning, clerical work, you know, deals so that you can scrape together the money to go tell campaign to go away. Like, what the hell is that? That is not successfully running an NBA organization.
Yeah. And I, like, to the fans, like, that doesn't do us any good. That just puts the money that you made a mistake on back in your own pocket. Good for you guys. Good for you guys. It put the $3.2 million back in your own pocket for making the mistake you made back in October back last year in October when you picked up his option. That does nothing for us, because you guys aren't going to spend the money on the team to go get somebody for that. So whatever. I just wanted to bring up the deal, Matt, and welcome aboard, because that's what I was talking about 2 weeks ago when they made the deal for Melo. I said the optics of this whole thing is just, was it really worth it? Was it really worth it in the end? And I'm not mad about this deal, because whatever. I hope TLC plays even in a minor role. Just whatever. Just see what he has, because if he goes out on a restricted free agency, more than likely nobody's going to even remotely sniff looking at him. And if he plays halfway, if he gets any role here, whatever. Just play him at this point. Who cares? So,
I mean, this Bulls team is desperate for wings right now.
Right.
And especially with Chandler Hutchison on the shelf with his broken toe. Yeah, give the guy minutes. Like, I'm sorry, I don't think we need to be seeing any more of Shaq Harrison
Agreed.
At the three.
Agreed.
Like, if you have a healthy guy who is 6'6 with a 6'7 wingspan that you can throw in there and plug and play at the three on your team that's 12-41, yeah, why not do it?
Agreed. So, yeah, that's just my theory. And, like, look, we can dice the money up a million different ways, too. So that was just my theory, is that they were making up for the campaign money that they spent. All right, let's final 20 minutes here on the show. Let's get into some trade talks. We're going to be doing this all week, Tuesday, Wednesday, leading up to trade deadline on Thursday. Matt, real quick question for you. More or less excited than you were last year? It was kind of anticlimactic for us last year, because the Bulls made the deadline deal before the actual deadline with the Nico deal, and that was the one trade ship that we actually had to move, and the Bulls got one of the few first-round picks moved. So more or less excited about this trade deadline, because it's kind of unknown what the Bulls are going to do. So what are your thoughts real quick before we get into some of these scenarios?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited and looking forward to the next few days, just because in general, the week or handful of days leading up to the NBA trade deadline is usually pretty entertaining, just as an NBA fan. And we've already gotten some drama with Chris Stapps going to Dallas and all that. And, you know, all this different talk coming out from Anthony Davis and people in his camp, Kyrie Irving and people in his camp. It's going to be fascinating, I think. I think hopefully, you know, I don't know if we'll get a trade between now and Thursday that's bigger than a player like Kristaps moving teams. Like, that's a big trade. I hope we see some more action. As far as what the Bulls are about to do or not do between now and Thursday, I hope they do something. I think it's almost impossible at this point that they're going to get anything for Jabari Parker or Robin Lopez, based on what I'm hearing. We were just talking earlier about, hey, maybe they look and see what kind of offers they can get for Bobby. I would love them to like, here's what I want to see happen. A few teams around the league look at an impending free agent that they have and say, I think this guy's going to leave. Let's deal him now so we can get something for him. And I would love for the Bulls to be in those kind of talks to actually get themselves a star player. Because we're talking about how it's hard to rebuild through the drafts. We're talking about how it's hard to get big names to come here in free agency. So go make something happen. The Dallas Mavericks made something happen. Teams can make something happen if they want to. So right now, I mean, we're talking about how Chris Dunn doesn't look like the point guard of the future. Go make something happen. Go see what you can get for Chris Dunn and make something happen. That's what I hope will happen, but I don't think it will.
I agree with you. I think your best chip right now, especially teams who like to have guys under control, is Bobby. I think Bobby is your best trade chip, especially for teams looking to keep guys under control and especially contending teams. Like, restricted free agency for a guy that, you know, his value's dipped. Like, as far as cost is gonna be concerned this summer. So, thinking about teams like Portland or the 76ers, too, who lost Saric and Covington when having to trade for Jimmy. You know, avenues like that are going to have to be discussions that the Bulls have in the next 72 hours leading up to the trade deadline. So we're probably not going to get to all of the scenarios that are playing out. And obviously with rumors popping up in the next few days, new scenarios will play out on different episodes. But let's start here, Matt. Let's start with the 76ers. I've got a few scenarios with the 76ers. Let's run through these. And you tell me if any of these entice you. If Philly's willing to part with their first round pick, I think Bobby would fit decently with the Sixers. Justin Patton, Zahir Smith, or Furkan Korkmaz, and Philly's first rounder this year for Bobby Portis. One of those three players and Philly's first rounder for Bobby.
That's an interesting hypothetical. I think the Sixers would be hesitant to do that deal. I don't know if the Sixers say yes to that.
Patton and Smith have both been dealing with injuries. If you're getting Zahir Smith back, take the first round pick out. If you're getting Patton or Korkmaz, then they have to include the first.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I don't know. How would you feel about that? How would you feel about sending away Bobby and that being the return? Either just getting Zahir Smith or getting one of those other two guys, Patton or Korkmaz, with a pick.
My theory on this is the thing that scares me about Smith is he had that infection in his foot, and that's what's kept him out the entire season, and he's actually just getting back and healthy. He's playing in the G League right now with Patton. He was a good prospect, and the things that I'm reading from 76ers guys is that he hasn't been known to be a shooter, and that's the thing that we've been complaining about the most. But the thing that they like about him is that the 76ers pass a lot, and they've got a bunch of guys that will move the ball, and there's been the ding, ding, ding thing that's been the problem with the Bulls. He's a solid prospect from last year's system, and he's still young and still got a ton of athleticism. But the infection in the foot bothers me.
That is a worry. But man, I just went back and just looked at his profile real quick. I knew that he was from the draft last year. The Suns took him like middle of the first round. I didn't know he was only 19. Still only 19.
Yep.
So definitely a nice young piece to fit into that rebuild that we're trying to get going here.
Not sure how desperate the 76ers are to part with a young piece like that. But if they're very unwilling to trade their first round pick next year, especially with not knowing whether or not Jimmy is going to stay, that could be a possibility, you know? And with all the injury history that they've had and this all playing out, that could be a possibility. But the whole thing with Patton or Korkmaz, you've got to get that first round pick attached, especially because Bobby's a restricted free agent and they'll have some type of control over him if anybody wants to offer him a contract. And he'd fit good. The only problem with Bobby going there is, what was that relationship like with Jimmy, you know, here?
Yeah.
And how would that play out when he goes to the 76ers? But I think he would fit great with what they're doing in Philadelphia. So that's an option. And there's only a limited amount of teams that would trade for Bobby and could use his services and have expiring deals that the Bulls would be able to take on that you could attach him with because of the money and the situation that the Bulls want to be in. Coming into free agency. So something to think about.
Yeah, and to look at what the Sixers are dealing with pick-wise, currently they have the 25th pick tail end of the first round. They also have the 34th pick early second round, in addition to 43rd and 55 right now. So they got a slew of second round picks coming up in the 2019 draft. And I know a lot of people kind of roll their eyes about second round picks and whether or not they're actually useful. Bulls did get a couple for Holiday, which, you know, between that and Seldon, is actually looking like a pretty damn good trade right now. I know we hate to give them credit, but that's a pretty good looking trade right now. I'm with you. I've never actually been that impressed with Justin Patton. Like, I just think there's kind of a limited ceiling there. Korkmaz was an interesting prospect coming into the draft. I watched some film of him in the draft, and I just kind of have been disappointed with what he's done at the NBA level compared to the potential I saw when I was watching his draft tape. So, yeah, I think I'm with you. Like, if the Bulls are sending Bobby away and the Sixers are only willing to part with one of those guys, I would hope to get a pick back. And, you know, maybe it's a late first rounder or an early second rounder. I'd be fine with that. Because you have to talk about moving Bobby for something and getting something. If you decide that you don't want to pay him, you know, $14 million on a new contract per year to be your bench, you know, power forward, then get something for him between now and Thursday.
Agreed. I totally agree on that. And, like, look, maybe Bobby's not even worth the first-round pick then. Then, like, the Sixers own the Bulls' second-round pick this year, too. So that could be in play as well. Maybe you steal that back. You know, maybe that's part of a deal. But, like, Justin Patton, to me, is just a filler. Like, at this point,
yeah,
he's had some injuries. I'm not too thrilled on what his potential could be here with the Bulls. And, like you were saying before, like, adding another front court piece, like, that doesn't thrill me, especially with all the injuries and stuff. So, just at this point. Eh.
And here's the other thing to think about. And I've certainly heard some Bulls fans mention it to me on Twitter and whatever.
I don't have Twitter. I don't do anything like that. And
as people start to talk about, will they look to see what they can get for Bobby between now and Thursday? Is Bobby more or less valuable than Nico Mirotic? Just question. I'm not answering. I'm just posing that question to you and to Bulls fans. Do you think that Bobby is more or less valuable than Nico Mirotic right now? Because let's journey back and remember that, yes, the Bulls were able to net themselves a first-round pick, which ended up because of a unfortunate late-season roll from the Pelicans falling down to 22 when we thought for a while it may end up being a lottery pick. But they got that first-round pick for Nico Mirotic and taking on Omer Asik's bad money. A lot of fans kind of forget that extra part where, yeah, we got a pick for Nico, but we had to take, like, you know, $18 million of unusable Asik to get that pick. So put that into perspective when you're talking about what Bobby might be worth on the trade market over the next 72 hours.
Yeah, and real quickly, is Nico's 16.7 points per game, 8.3 rebounds. He's shooting 44.7% from the field, 36.8% from three, averaging 7.2 three-point attempts per game. So, yeah, I don't know.
And also, when Nico came back from his broken face, and the Bulls won on a seven-game winning streak in which Nico played well, Chris Dunn actually played pretty well in that winning streak, too. I wonder where that guy went, but the point being, that upped Nico's trade value. People saw Nico comes back, Nico plays well, Bulls win lots of games accidentally, Nico's valuable. Bobby has put together a couple of nice games. He played very well on Wednesday night of last week, and he played very well again, certainly at least the first half, putting up 28 points on Saturday night. That is not a seven-game winning streak. That is two games where you played pretty well. So that, plus the fact that he's not averaging what Nico, you know, averaged, the Bulls are probably looking at a significantly less enticing package for Bobby than they got for Nico.
Totally.
And that was with Asik's contract coming back too.
I'll be interested to see if the Pelicans can deal Nico by the deadline. He's dealing with a calf injury right now, but I don't think they're going to get a whole lot for him right now either. Like, they're not, I don't think they're going to get a first round pick this year for him, like, unless they take a salary dump or something. But yeah, that's, you're right. And last year it was hard to get first round picks. Like, the Bulls and the Pistons, or the Bulls and the Clippers were the only ones to get first round picks. And that was Blake Griffin and Nico Mirotic being traded. That was it. Those were the only first round picks dealt at the deadline. So just keep that in mind too. Okay,
I think Bulls fans might think that Bobby's more valuable than he is.
Yeah,
sadly.
Well, that tends to happen.
Most often the Bulls front office also overvalues their players.
Absolutely.
So maybe it's just a Chicago thing.
All right, so interesting thing to think about, just because the Sixers are one of the few teams looking for actual front court depth, which is hard to find, Matt. I've been looking through all the teams and like having to keep in mind that the Bulls don't want to take on any money beyond this season. And that just limits everything that they can do, you know? So just having to keep that in mind, the Sixers are like one of the few teams that are actually a place that is an option. So out on Markelle Fultz, which I agree with you, would just be a massive risk, especially with all the medical history here. Zaire Smith, I don't know if the Sixers would be even remotely interested in parting ways with, but let's keep our eyes on that as the deadline keeps going. But let's get through a few more of these before we get out of here, and we'll obviously do some more as the week goes on.
Yeah.
All right, final trade scenario of the day, and then we'll get into plenty more tomorrow. Obviously, you guys can send us anything that you guys are thinking about as far as deals that are going to happen, specifically that goes towards the Bulls. Hit us up 331-979-1369, the place to do that, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, Jordan C. Malley, and Bulls_Peck. Final one, Matt. We talked about Ricky Rubio at the back end of last week. Kind of floated the idea out there. Haven't heard much since then, but put together kind of a couple packages here. Let's talk about one specifically that would just be Bulls and Jazz. Tomorrow's episode, we'll talk about a three-way deal because the Grizzlies are also interested. Jazz are interested in Mike Conley, but the Bulls could squeeze themselves in that deal. Jazz and Bulls, I've got for you. And the only deal that makes sense in terms for the Jazz, what they're looking for, and what makes sense for the Bulls in terms of expiring deals. What I've got here, what I've put together is Ricky Rubio and Thabo Sefolosha come to the Bulls for Jabari Parker and insert backup guard at will. Whether that's, and I don't know, there's a restriction on this too, and I would have to double check on this, but either Shaq Harrison, Ryan Arcidiacono, or Antonio Blakeney. Now, I'm not sure if the Bulls can trade Archie or Shaq because they just signed a fully guaranteed deal for the rest of the year. That I would have to double check on, but either way, just to make it fill and to give the Jazz another guard if they wanted it, you can include Antonio Blakeney in this deal. If they don't want it, you don't have to include him in this deal. Thoughts on that? I don't know, like we've said multiple times over the last couple of weeks, how interested the Jazz actually are in Parker, but this would have to coincide with the fact that the Jazz aren't going to give up a valuable piece in Ricky Rubio just for the sake of adding Jabari Parker, because they do have Favors, who has been playing and been a good defensive piece for that Jazz team, just for the sake of a guy that doesn't play defense and just gets buckets in Parker. So what are your thoughts on this?
I love that you said Thabo Sefolosha. That to me just makes me smile because it brings me back to, oh, I don't know, what was that, like 2006? When he made his NBA debut as a member of the Bulls. Man, that is a long time ago. Holy crap. Still playing. Man, can't believe that Thabo Sefolosha is still in the league. That is 34 years young. I think you're right about the Archie and Shaq situation, as far as I think right now they are untradeable. The whole Rubio thing is interesting to me because, you know, I don't know how much Utah values him right now, but to me, he's kind of aging, and he's never been like a game-changing point guard, but I think that they won't let him go for nothing. He also was like very important to that team in their playoff run last season. Remember, like, he missed a few games with like a bruised hamstring or whatever, and like that team sorely missed Rubio. I know that Utah maybe aren't necessarily the world beaters this season that people were starting to think they would be. Like, remember going back to like last fall when people were talking about like what teams are going to make this crazy, huge, surprising leap, and everybody was on the Utah bandwagon. You know, obviously because of Donovan Mitchell and his play, Gobert, you know, defensive player of the year candidate, and Rubio playing well. Well, they kind of, you know, backslid a little bit this season, but even still, I think that they value Ricky Rubio so that they are not going to give. I mean, when you proposed the trade and said throw in Jabari Parker, like, I kind of laughed thinking, man, like, nobody wants Jabari Parker. Although, like, I got to say, so, you know, he missed the game Saturday for family reasons. I think he had a death in the family, unfortunately, but been playing pretty well off the bench. I mean, Jordan, do you think that Utah would want Jabari to actually, like, bring him there? And then, I mean, they're not going to pick up the option and pay him $20 million right next season. That's ridiculous.
I prefaced all this with the fact that there would have to be another move in place. They would have to be acquiring another guard. So it would have to be, like, say for the fact that they wanted to go out and get Mike Conley and they got him. Like, if they did that, the Grizzlies aren't even remotely interested in keeping Ricky Rubio. But if he's of value to the Bulls would want him. So that's why, like, I want to go through the three-way trade maybe tomorrow and see if the Bulls can find a way to squeeze themselves in there if that's really something that they want to do. But the reason why Jabari keeps coming up in all of this is not because any of these teams actually want Jabari. It's because he's the only one that matches any of these guys' salaries.
I was going to say, his contract can match in ways that, like, if teams are trying to get rid of guys who are on their way out or are overpaid or whatever, then Jabari's contract is useful in that regard.
Right.
And the other thing about this with Rubio specifically, I know you just, you know, you mentioned Conley for a second. We can get into a potential bigger three-team trade on tomorrow's episode because we're kind of short on time now. But I think I said this before, and I'll say it again just to reiterate. We heard something about the Bulls being interested in Rubio or a different veteran point guard like Darren Collison to push and challenge Chris Dunn to really earn the starting point guard spot. I hate that idea. I think that's pointless. I think it's a waste of time and effort and manpower and money and a waste of everything. The reason that I would want Rubio, or at least I'm interested in the idea, is because he played well with Zach LaVine when they were both in Minnesota. And right now, we need to find a better partner for Zach LaVine because Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, is a failure, flat out.
Agreed. I think it's too late on the experiment with the whole Dunn thing and the pushing him and, like, for the last 29 games, really. And I know that they're trying to convince Rubio maybe over the 29 games that he's here that, hey, you know, come back with us because you're going to go into unrestricted free agency in the summer. Come back with us and maybe we can find a deal that works out for 2 years. And like, you've been here, you know us, instead of going to have to pitch him out cold in the summer. So there's all little factors that play in, but that's the most important part. And we should have done this at the beginning when we were talking about this, but keep that in mind. Robin Lopez and Jabari Parker are the only guys, if you're going to take on big salaries like this, that match up. So it's very difficult to find those deals. Jabari on $20 million and Robin on $14.8 million, somewhere around there. But Rubio, $14.8 million coming off the books at this summer. Tabo Cephalosha making $5 million. Cephalosha hasn't played hardly at all. He had surgery early on in January to fix something with his MCL, so he's been dealing with that. He just came back. He's been playing limited minutes with the Jazz, so he would definitely be included in a package if that was the route that they wanted to go. But certainly, like you had said, not going to make any type of impact with the Jazz. And the Jazz have checked in, too, on, like, Nico Mirotic. So if they're going to make any type of upgrade, like, I don't know why Jabari would be that guy. But like you said, if they're going to go and trade Rubio, they got to replace him with somebody because Dante Exum and Raul Nieto is not going to be the answer for them going into the playoffs. So
no.
And Donovan Mitchell, I don't know if he can be the main guy to do that, like the main ball handler, distributor, point guard of that team. And really, do you want to play around with the guessing game in the last 29 games when you're sitting at the 7th or 8th seed in the Western Conference? This isn't the time to do that. It's the time to upgrade. So Maybe that's why we got to get into maybe a three-way trade with the Grizz and the Bulls and the Jazz going forward. But interesting idea.
The other funny detail, thinking about Utah and their situation, that's a team that waived Derrick Rose last season.
Yeah, how about that?
Said, you came here in as an afterthought piece of this huge three-team trade with Cleveland, and I forget whoever else it was, but bye.
How about
man,
that?
Like, that's where we were a year ago. A year ago, Derrick Rose was working out in a gym at Cleveland State by himself, and his workout coach or partner or trainer or whatever, after being waived by Utah.
How about
that? Look at what he's doing in Minnesota this season. It's crazy.
How about that? Last thing on Rubio, and then we'll get out of here. Reported by the Salt Lake Tribune this weekend that the Jazz had an official offer to the Memphis Grizzlies for Mike Conley that started with Rubio and their 2019 first round pick. So that's where it started. So that's they didn't obviously the Grizzlies just didn't take it. So
right,
we'll see where that goes from here. But Mike Conley's deal is massive. So
it is a huge contract.
They're not going to get nearly the return they think they're going to get. So
no, but man, dude, that's one of my favorite parts about the next few days leading up to the deadline is hearing about all of the hilariously lowball offers that teams throw at each other,
right.
like that Lakers offer for AD that was just poop. It was poop. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to hear about the Bulls either receiving or sending out really lowball offers for somebody. And just
Woj obviously got six different scenarios and he decided to tweet that one. He knew he was going to get that reaction. Well, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Trade week is upon us. The trade deadline Thursday ending at 3 p.m. Eastern here in the United States for our listeners. Internationally, it's also a big week for you guys. So thanks for listening wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. More trade deadline action as the week continues. So send all of your trade scenarios, anything that you guys are thinking about, send it to us. 331-979-1369. We'll do mailbag. We'll get to as many text messages, trade scenarios. So drop those for us in text messages form, voicemail form, whatever you got for us. Tweet at us at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back on tomorrow's episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
You're kidding. Bobby Portis, the greenest of green lights. My goodness. Bobby Portis has erupted for 16 points in 8 minutes.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com